قشنگم به جانم شلر زد، یاد لبان تو خاکم به سر زد. ای آرزوی دل ایزار من، ای روشنی شب تار من،
welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. Joining us now is Christine Fair, former United Nations political officer. She's a professor at the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. Her books include Treading Softly on Sacred Ground, Counterinsurgency Operations in Sacred Space, The Madrasa Challenge, Militancy and Religious Education in Pakistan, and Fortifying Pakistan, the Role of U.S. Internal Security Assistance. Welcome to Background Briefing, Christine Fair.
Oh, thank you for having me. Thank you.
And Chris, you were there in Afghanistan as a United Nations political officer, and I take it that the women that you worked with was one of the victims of this atrocious attack in Mazar-e Sharif.
No. Actually, the person that was the head of office, of course, I've known. I mean, there's a lot of churn in UNAMA. And they haven't made clear who all the folks are, but I did very casually know the head of office there.
And the Russian in charge of the office, of course,
exactly.
He pretended. This is the fellow you knew?
Well, I mean, a lot of these folks have been around for a while. As I said, you know, he had actually been there for a while when I was there in 07. I'm pretty sure he was there.
And he's escaped because he speaks Dari and was able to say that he was a Muslim.
That has been reported, but I obviously have no insight into that.
So, in general, what is your impression then that this obscure, media-hungry pastor down in Florida is able to create such a overreaction in another part of the world?
Well, first of all, he did not create this overreaction. And I have to say, it's pretty difficult for me to have a rational discussion about this because, quite frankly, I'm really angry about it. It's above the fact that this pastor is a complete lunatic from the boondocks of Florida who enjoys very little support. I mean, most Americans generally, are absolutely appalled that this individual is doing this. I actually put the blame, quite frankly, on President Karzai. President Karzai has been consistently whipping up a domestic frenzy about this issue in Afghanistan. His most recent musings that the Americans have to quote to justice, unquote. He knows full well that though it may be loathsome that Pastor Jones has burnt the Quran, he knows that he hasn't violated the law. So for President Karzai to be making these public protestations and demands that he knows are absolutely preposterous has, I would argue, done more to inflame Afghans than anything else. So when I sort of think about where the blame sort of gets spread around, it's really difficult not to be incredibly angry at Karzai himself.
And would that explain then why it seems like everybody in Afghanistan knew about the actions of this obscure pastor down in Florida, but nobody much here in the United States has ever even heard of him?
Well, you know, you have to really ask this question. This is a country wherein approximately 85-90% of the population is illiterate, and yet all of a sudden they seem to be incredibly familiar with activities of an obscure pastor in nowhere, Florida, with a following of 10. And, you know, so apart from holding Karzai deeply responsible for this, there have been a number of religious entrepreneurs in the Muslim world themselves. By the way, this was the case with the Khartoum riots. You know, we saw a very similar drama. Many of the so-called blasphemous cartoons had never actually even been published. But we now know that there were a number of specific, I'm going to call them entrepreneurs, that brought these non-published cartoons to light and generated quite a bit of violence. But the Maulvi at the Blue Mosque itself in Mazar is also responsible for whipping up this this crowd into this frenzy. And there is an absolute irony here. And, it's, as I said, it's difficult for me to not be angry about this because at the end of the day, they're going to be killing Muslims. I mean, they're, look at who was killed in the Mazar attack. Were there any Americans killed in the Mazar attack? But more importantly, the hypocrisy of this. I can't count how many Qurans have been built when Sunni militants go in and burn Shia mosques. Where's the outrage at the innumerable numbers of Qurans that are destroyed due to senseless sectarian violence? So one can focus this around what actually happened to a book considered to be sacred by a community, but there are many more Qurans that have been burnt in sectarian violence than this clown in Florida could even aspire to burn.
Well, I suppose then the question then becomes: is the words on the page of a sacred text more valuable than the lives of human beings?
Well, you know, look, I'm not a Muslim, so I can't speak to that. And you would have to talk to. And of course, you're going to find people who have very different views. I mean, from my various acquaintances, for example, on Facebook and Twitter, I mean, we've had some lively exchanges about this. And there's obviously, even within the Muslim world, a lot of outrage that this is actually going on. So there's not a monolithic response by any means. But I think there's what we really are confronting more than anything else is a class of juridical culture. You know, I found some of the musings of my Pakistani acquaintances to be really quite frustrating. I was in Pakistan when Governor Salman Taseer was killed because he had the hubris to note that Pakistan's blasphemy law itself is discordant with the evidentiary standards in the Quran. I was there when he was killed. Incredibly sensible people had no problem with his being killed. Large crowds thronged various sites of congregation to celebrate the actions of his killer. And so it's so bizarre to me that you would have a legal environment that doesn't allow basic things like freedom of speech to the exclusion of basically lionizing murderers. And then you also have these demands that this fellow, you know, be quote, brought to justice for burning the Quran. I think it's very difficult for Americans to understand, and I think it's very difficult for people in the region to understand. We are really in a class of juridical cultures, and I don't see an easy way of resolving this. My friends and associates in South Asia don't understand that this nut job's right to burn a Quran is exactly the same rights that allow Muslims, Jews, Christians, atheists like me to believe what we believe or not believe. And so this understanding, this legal commitment to freedom of speech and freedom of faith just has no resonance in many of the areas where we're seeing these kinds of protests. I mean, Afghanistan and Pakistan, they have no culture of this variety. You don't have freedom of religion. If you convert to become a Christian, this is a capital crime. So this is one of those issues where it's almost impossible to have a rational conversation because the fundamental commitments of folks on the various sides of this discussion have very different understandings of rights and responsibilities.
Again, I'm speaking with Christine Fair, who is a professor at the Georgetown University and was a political officer with the United Nations mission in Afghanistan. We're talking about the butchering of UN workers and their Gurkha guards and various uprisings throughout Afghanistan. And I suppose in Pakistan, too, I imagine there's riots as well.
Well, I mean, you've seen the comments already from the president. Again, President Zardari, demanding that he, quote, be brought to justice. These guys know full well he's not broken an American law. So this is nothing but fatuous pandering to a population that can be very easily mobilized on these issues. Both President Zardari and President Karzai know he has not broken an American law. So there is no, quote, bringing him to justice. So the man is completely loathsome for burning a Quran. He is apparently entitled to do so under our Constitution. And those very same constitutional provisions are what allow you and me to believe what we believe or not believe. And so would I rather have some individual being allowed to burn a Quran or live in a juridical culture where murderers are in fact celebrated? I don't know. It's fairly easy for me to make that choice.
Well, the governor that you referred to, Christopher, he, of course, was murdered because he supported the reform of the blasphemy laws. Some Christian woman was being hung out to dry as a result of these draconian blasphemy laws.
Blasphemy law in Pakistan is particularly absurd because there's virtually no evidentiary requirements, and it's usually deployed to settle a dispute. So and of course, if you actually read the Quran, there are a number. I mean, there's a lot of different controversial things, but one is, for example, a blasphemer has 3 days to repent their blasphemy, in which case they're supposed to be absolved. On another set of controversial issues, it's not even clear that a non-Muslim can be a blasphemer. But in any event, there's evidentiary requirements that the individual be declared a blasphemer. And of course, Pakistan's law requires none of this. And so it's usually used to settle disputes. And of course, it's difficult to get a prosecution. It's very difficult all the way around to deal with blasphemy. If the individual is acquitted, judges are afraid of retribution. If the individual is acquitted, it's not uncommon that they might be gunned down actually in the courthouse premises. If they are committed to jail, which is often the case, or while they're languishing in jail, while their case actually comes to trial, it's not unusual for them to be killed while they're in prison. So, you know, this is obviously not something, I think it's difficult for Americans to understand that you can have a system that puts people to death for blasphemy, especially when blasphemy is so capaciously defined under this law and with such little evidentiary requirements. Difficult for us to understand that. But in the same way, it's difficult for Pakistanis to understand how it is that we can let some dude burn the Quran. I mean, this is a clash of juridical cultures. It's fundamental. I don't really see a way of, I don't know how we resolve this.
Well, obviously, it's not wise or responsible to stir up this kind of activity. What I find more offensive than this boneheaded, media-hungry pastor down there, who also, by the way, is equally active in anti-gay as well as anti-Muslim sentiments. He's tied in with...
He's truly a despicable human being. Right. You know, the thing is this, Ian, there's no public support for him.
No, and I was about to say, though, that we have more serious people who are given airtime on Fox, for example, like Glenn Beck, who on a nightly basis attacks Muslims and suggests that our entire foreign policy in the Middle East is misguided because people like Gaddafi and Mubarak are toppling and they're going to be replaced by Sharia law. He had Richard Pipes on the other day, who I believe is... Daniel Pipe, the son of Richard Pipes. The head of
anti-Muslim...
USIP, he was on there spouting the same kind of nonsense about this kind of Armageddon of Sharia that threatens the West.
Well, and of course, you know, the supreme irony is that when you have a butchery like this, you know, the supreme irony is that these sorts of savage attacks actually fuel the very fires of hatred that this idiot pastor himself sought to stoke in the first instance. And when it's all said and done, Ian, there's going to be a lot more Muslims killed as a consequence of this than non-Muslims. I mean, how many Afghans themselves were killed in the Mazar-e-Sharif attack?
Well, I suppose the other question that we're left with just in the last couple of minutes, Chris Fair, is that we are in the midst of this nation-building effort here in Afghanistan that's costing the U.S. taxpayer something like $8 billion a month. And a lot of Americans have to be asking themselves, are we really going to impose our values or encourage our values on people who have clearly very different outlooks than we do?
Well, look, I mean, this is another issue about which I have very firm feelings. If there's some genuine expectation that is a result of our presence in Afghanistan, is a result of our presence in Afghanistan, that we're somehow going to change Afghan culture, and this is already misguided. So, and I get very frustrated when I hear people talk about, well, if we leave Afghanistan, women will have no rights. Well, as evidenced by these rampages, very few people have rights in Afghanistan, very fundamental rights of safety people don't have in Afghanistan. So I don't, if that's an expectation that people have, I think those expectations need to be disabused. What we've been trying to do is try to establish some form of basic governance where the government can provide very basic amenities so that the government can basically outcompete the Taliban. We have failed in every regard to do this. And so I think the question is not about changing Afghan values. I think we have no right to even consider that. But what we do have a requirement to do is ask ourselves, when you have the Afghan president himself opportunistically stoking domestic outrage over the activities of a wackadoon in a Floridian boondocks who is reviled by your average American, you know, stoking this outrage for nothing but political purposes, we have to wonder, what are we doing with an ally like this? And that's, for me, the question that all of this raises. We have spent so many lives, both military, civilian, American, and Afghan, and obviously the endless bleed of treasure, to prop up the government of a man like Karzai, who is so clearly not an ally worth defending. Well, and the irresponsibility of Karzai, there's going to be more Afghans that die as a consequence of this than not. So not only is he imperiling the relationship that he has, or lack thereof, with the American population, he's putting his own population at risk for his own selfish political needs. It's outrageous.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today in Los Angeles, Christine Fair.
Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Christine Fair, former United Nations political officer in Afghanistan. She's a professor in the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University and is a senior fellow in study of terrorism at West Point. Let's now take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking with the real lives Mr. and Mrs. Smith, Bob and Dana Bear.
دهله بزن که با هم اتن تن من تشنم با من سخن زن دهله بزن که با هم اتن تن دهله بزن که با هم اتن تن من تشنم با من سخن زن من تشنم با من سخن زن.